Chapter 10. The History of Witchcraft in Latin America. By way of recap, the bare-bones definition of modern-day Wicca is witchcraft. Their name means witch. So far, we have looked at the types of witchcraft, how it is practiced all over the world, and how protection from it comes only through reliance on Jesus and his authority against all evil. For the last 7 chapters, but who's counting? I am. We've been looking at the history of witchcraft and man. It is all over the world. Back in Noah's time, God judged the planet for its pervasive wickedness and hit a restart button on humanity. The worldwide flood left just him and 7 others who survived, to begin repopulating the earth. But in a short couple hundred years, his offspring rebelled against God with occult practices that included building their Tower of Babel in Babylon. They also rebelled by refusing to spread out and cover the earth. God confused the language and forced them to disperse, resulting in their witchcraft practices spreading with them. In this chapter, we will see another area of the world where that evil has shown up in a big way. Again, the sewage pipe of the occult and witchcraft practices originated in Babylon and then spread to Egypt, Greece, Rome, Asia, and India, as well as the huge island chain southeast of India. In the last chapter, we dealt with African witchcraft and its human sacrificing, which was also something we saw in India. Witchcraft leads to rotten, horrible, and murderous behavior. That is why scripture repeatedly tells us to stay away from the occult and certainly don't let it spread throughout your country. We are not yet to the part of this book that talks about witchcraft in the United States, but I'm convinced that human sacrifice is even going on here. We are just not told about it because our media wants to either act like nothing is happening or downplay the negative results because they promote witchcraft as some fun activity that is just about the appreciation of nature. But it is not. Witchcraft leads to murderous behavior, and any country that lets it seep in, let alone embraces it, will be headed down the tubes. Unfortunately, that is what is happening to our country today. We saw how Africa has gotten so steeped in witchcraft that they have a huge problem with human sacrifices, and it has even gotten to the point that vendors are allowed to sell witchcraft paraphernalia on the streets. It is not even a back alley thing there. And those evil practices are spreading more because witches are protected from even the accusation that they are practicing witchcraft. Unfortunately, those same sorts of witch-protecting laws have been passed in India, where they too have a massive problem with witchcraft. African witches are looked at as practitioners of divination, rainmakers, and shaman. Those last two titles are exactly what we will see when we get to the North American Indian culture. Again, this is nothing new. African witch doctors are also considered priests, sorcerers, and medicine men. That last one is so much so that Africa is actually considering the legalization of witches' health methods to help with the country's doctor shortage crisis. It's crazy. We also saw the pattern of our media promoting African witchcraft, especially through movies like Disney's Lion King, which was heartily endorsed by those actually practicing witchcraft. And the positive media spin on witchcraft has even contributed to a trend among Black American millennials, who are getting back to their African witchcraft roots. And another big promoter of horrible occult practices like African witchcraft is our American music industry. So, that is where we have been. Now, we want to hop the pond from Africa over to Latin America, Mexico plus Central and South America, where, unfortunately, we are going to see more of the same behavior that shocked and outraged us about India and Africa. You saw how bad it has been in India with witches like the Thuggee murderers, who travel the country, seeking to kill men, women, and children on behalf of their blood-soaked and vicious demon called Kali. Then we saw more evil behavior that was hard to stomach in Africa with witch doctors killing adults and kids for their body parts, especially hunting down albinos to chop off their limbs and murder them, just for supposedly stronger potions. That was bad enough, but wait until you learn what has been going on for a long time in Latin America. First though, one aspect we have to wonder about is how those practices got all the way across the ocean. So far, we have been dealing with just one hemisphere of the earth because it was all walkable from the original Babylonian origin of the occult and witchcraft. But how did they get across the pond to North, Central, and South America? If we were to believe the lie of evolution that brainwashes our children in school every day, crossing the ocean did not happen until 1492 when Columbus sailed ocean blue. You probably remember that saying from the larger poem. But, of course, Columbus and his crew were not the first, and that is according to both biblical and secular history. So, how was it that witchcraft spread to the Americas from those other continents? How did the witches get here? Well, let's take a look at Genesis 10:21-22. Of course, it comes right before Genesis 11, which gives great detail for much of the information talked about in Genesis 10. Genesis 10 covers the table of nations, the lineage of Ham, Shem and Japheth's descendants, who ended up finally spreading across the world after God confused language at the Tower of Babel. Those three sons of Noah remind me of an old stove we used to have here at Sunrise Bible Church. It got replaced a while back by some new industrial stoves, but that antique was older than dirt, making it a huge effort to pull it out of there. But I could not wait to do so, because I was convinced the back was going to have the maker's initials. And I just knew it was going to be either Ham, Shem or Japheth. That had to be the stove they used on Noah's Ark. But I digress. Again, the Table of Nations lists the descendants of Noah, who came after the flood. And obviously, all of mankind are from those eight people who got off the ark, meaning we are all in the lineage of Noah's sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Their generations of offspring are outlined in Genesis 10, after which Genesis 11 describes the specific event that God used to spread the people, the Tower of Babel judgment. Now that you have some outline of those chapters, let's take a look at the account of God giving the details about how and where the earth got repopulated. Here is Genesis 10:21, where it talks about the Semites.
Sons were also born to Shem, whose older brother was Japheth. Shem was the ancestor of all the sons of Eber. The sons of Shem, Elam, Asher, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. The sons of Aram, Uz, Hul, Gether, and Meshech. Arphaxad was the father of Shelah and Shelah the father of Eber. Two sons were born to Eber. One was named Peleg, because in his time the earth was divided.
As you heard, Eber's son was the famous pirate, Peleg. No, you were reading too fast, the name is Peleg. Hey, you know you were thinking that. Peleg means division or divided in Hebrew. So, Eber's boy was named for his time when the earth was divided, to spread people apart. Peleg's brother was Joktan, who became the father of a huge family. According to the Bible, just Joktan's sons were Almodad, Shelef, Hazarmaveth, Jera, Adoram, Uzal, Dikla, Obal, Abimael, Sheba, Ophir, Havilah, and Jobab. Here is the rest of Genesis 10.
The region where they lived stretched from Mesha toward Sepher, in the eastern hill country. These are the sons of Shem by their clans and languages, in their territories and nations. These are the clans of Noah's sons, according to their lines of descent, within their nations. From these the nations spread out over the earth after the flood.
That last sentence tells us that the descendants dispersed across the whole planet. Evolutionists want to claim it was only the more recent people like the conquistadors and Columbus that crossed the oceans to America. But that is a huge lie. First, early man was more sophisticated than what has been told to us by the lie of evolution. That falsehood teaches, the further we look back in history, the more we see man only eked out an existence, while stuck in one area where he dragged his knuckles across the ground, as he circled a fire grunting, ow, ow, ow. That's not what archaeologists find buried in the dirt, and it doesn't agree with the biblical account. I'm going to give you a quick look at the true history, which again shows how God always gets it right. Early man was able to traverse back and forth between the continents, and it was way before Christopher Columbus, exactly like Genesis 10 lays out. If you want more information and evidence on this subject, get our enormous, interesting, and fun study, The Witness of Creation. The first proof that man has been traversing the oceans for a long, long time is seen in the coins that have been found.
Roman coins have been found in Venezuela, South America, and Maine. Roman coins were found in Texas at the bottom of an Indian mound at Round Rock. The mound is dated at approximately 800 AD.
What are Roman coins doing at any of those places? That's strange.
In 1957 near Phoenix City, Alabama, a small boy found a coin in a field from Syracuse on the island of Sicily, and dating from 490 BC. How did that get to Alabama?
In the summer of 1882, a miner in British Columbia found 30 Chinese coins buried 25 feet down, which were older than 2000 BC. Does that mean the Chinese were here in America? Yes, and a lot of evidence exists for that, folks. We have been lied to in the textbooks. While sinking a fence at a depth of 2 feet, a bronze coin was unearthed near Barron Falls, Australia, in 1910. The coin was positively identified as Egyptian, having been minted during the reign of Pharaoh Ptolemy IV around 200 BC. What? The Egyptians were down in Australia? Apparently, they were. Folks, I'm telling you we've been lied to because the archaeological evidence shows those people dispersed from Babylon and then began traversing the planet shortly after, just as God told us. In Australia, a bronze coin was dug up that was later identified as a Greek coin minted around 28 BC. What were the Greeks doing in Australia way back then?
Roman pottery was unearthed in Mexico that, according to its style, has been dated to the 2nd century AD. The Kensington runestone, discovered in Kensington, Minnesota, in 1898, contains an inscription describing an expedition of Norsemen into the interior of what is now North America.
This expedition is estimated to have taken place in the 1300s, which is way before Columbus came to America.
Around, fist-sized stone was found during the early 1890s in a cemetery near Nashville, Tennessee. Its front was inscribed with symbols thought to be Libyan, pre-100 AD style. It translates as, "The colonists pledged to redeem."
I wonder what happened to them. When we talk about witchcraft in North America, we will learn that there were some bloody cultures here, who might have caused the end of those colonists.
Near Rio de Janeiro, high on a vertical wall of rock, 3,000 feet up, is an inscription that reads, "Tyre, Phoenicia, Bazir, firstborn of Jethbal," and dated to the middle of the 9th century BC. A mysterious rock inscription was found by a farmer in 1931 on his property 50 miles west of Adelaide, Australia. The carvings were identified as Phoenician by French archaeologists and reads, "Men of the Pharaoh of the city of Say. Ot of Kish." Kish was an ancient Babylonian town on the Euphrates and was the birthplace of Ot, perhaps the greatest Babylonian mariner of the day.
According to that inscription, even as far back as the Babylonians, ships were able to sail down to Australia.
Near Parahyba, Brazil, an inscription in Phoenician has been translated, in part, as, "We are sons of Canaan from Sidon, the city of the king. Commerce has cast us on this distant shore, a land of mountains. We humans sacrificed a youth for the exalted gods and goddesses in the 19th year of Hiram, our mighty king. We embarked from Ezion Geber into the Red Sea and voyaged with 10 ships. We were at sea together for 2 years around the land belonging to Ham, Africa, but were separated by a storm, literally, from the hand of Baal, and we were no longer with our companions. So, we have come here, 12 men and 3 women, on a shore which I, the admiral, control. But auspiciously may the gods and goddesses favor us."
Hey dude, you have a big ego for the guy who got all those ships and people lost. Here's some further evidence.
An experienced botanist has identified plants in an ancient fresco painting as a pineapple and a specific species of squash, both native to the Americas. Yet the fresco is in the Roman city of Pompeii.
How did a Roman city have knowledge of those plants when those were only grown in the Americas?
In 1886, the remains of a shipwreck were found in Galveston Bay, Texas. Its construction is typically Roman. North of Cooktown, Australia, some strange Aboriginal carvings have been found depicting ships, not European, bearing the Aten symbol of the Egyptian sun god. Wollongong, Australia, apparently is notable for the wreckage of an ancient wooden ship similar to two found in swampland near Perth and believed to be Egyptian. A doll made of wood and wax was found deep in a well of sacrifice at Chichen Itza, Mexico, on which is written Roman script.
Not long ago, I was at Chichen Itza, where one method used by some, who we will learn about in this chapter, was to sacrifice people to their gods by chucking them into wells.
At Ulladulla, Australia, in a 2,000-year-old shell layer, an ancient Chinese stone head, depicting a goddess, was found.
In 1910, people digging a well near Cairns, Australia, found an Egyptian scarab beetle that was 6.5 feet below the surface. It was 3.5 inches in length and had hieroglyphics carved all over the underside. How did that get there?
During the 1920s, bushwalkers in far north Australia found a stone Peruvian idol, decorated in old Castilian jewelry.
Of course, Peru is in South America, so someone must have been hopping the pond. Japanese steel blades have been found in Alaska, and their distinctive pottery has been dug up in Ecuador. If we flip the routes around to look at the explorers coming back home, in 1982, kangaroos and other Australian marsupial fossils were found in Egypt. So, apparently the Egyptians not only traveled to Australia, they also brought some of the animals back home.
An ancient Chinese book, written around 338 BC, mentions a great southern continent inhabited by fierce black people, who used a strange weapon, which we now know to have been the boomerang.
In 1974, a 92-pound basalt rock was unearthed in Australia while digging the foundation for a factory. In this chapter we will see that calendars, like those that were used by people in Central and South America, were used to dictate their human sacrifices. And it is no shocker that they included serpents with their satanic worship.
A certain rock was carved with hieroglyphs of serpents and was identified as belonging to the most ancient Mesoamerican culture, estimated at 2000 BC. In 1914, archaeologist M.A. Gonzalez was excavating some Mayan ruins in the city of Acajutla, Mexico, when he was surprised by the discovery of two statuettes that were clearly Egyptian. One male and one female, the carvings bore ancient Egyptian dress and cartouches. Engravings, they are thought to depict Osiris and Isis.
The Olmecs were believed to be the first civilized people of South America around 1400 BC. They left behind these gigantic stone heads that appear to wear helmets. But here's the problem for those writing faked history in our textbooks. The head statues are single pieces of 6-foot-high granite that weighs 20 tons and do not only depict the faces of South Americans, like the Mayans, Aztecs, and Incas. Many have African features. How did these people know what Africans look like? And it is not just that. Many head statues also have white European features. So, these civilizations were obviously connected with people who traversed back and forth. Here is a good question.
What was an advanced, black, or possibly Asian, non-Egyptian, pre-Hispanic civilization doing in Mexico, in the Americas prior to and more advanced than the Maya and the Aztecs? No one knows where they came from, where they went, or how they moved those huge stone sculptures from distant quarries. Traditional archaeology doesn't have the answers.
Do you know what that means? Their evolution guess is a lie. The evolutionary history we have been fed is a false narrative. And they do not want anything to agree with the biblical account, so they just keep sweeping Bible-confirming evidence under the rug. Then they just repeat their lies loud enough and often enough, over a long period of time, until people grow to accept their deception. All they have needed to do was pump the false information out through control of our media, Hollywood, the secular education system, and government. But if you read the Bible, which I highly recommend, you are going to see exactly how the true history all fits together, just as it tells us. One guy says this.
Evolutionists want so much to show a steady inevitable progression from so-called caveman to advanced man. But Bible believers understand that man began building cities right from the beginning.
So, there is a little teaser from our huge Witness of Creation study. You can get more fascinating information like that, which will equip you biblically, give you tons of true history, and explain how our world relates to God's Word in the Bible. You can find that study and many more at getalifemedia.com. Now, I wanted to demonstrate the archaeological history about those who traversed our globe early on, because you might be wondering how all that witchcraft could have even gotten to America earlier than we have been told. And that is the point of this chapter. So far, we have seen how witchcraft went from Babylon to Egypt, Greece, Rome, Asia, India, and then Africa. We also just saw how Bible-confirming secular archaeology tells us that these early civilizations were able to cross the oceans. And by now you can easily guess what those ocean travelers brought with them to Mexico, as well as Central and South America, Latin America. Of course, I am talking about witchcraft. And boy, did the early Latin Americans develop those evil practices on a massive scale. We will begin that information by dealing with Mayan witchcraft. Like Africa, the Latin American area covered in this chapter is huge. However, we will only have room to look at the Mayans, Aztecs, Incas, and a little bit of the region's modern cultures. Even with those, I can only give an overview and, unfortunately, that will include the most grotesque aspects of their behavior, so that we deal with that evil. In fact, with the Mayans alone, I could give you a whole chapter. But I think when we're done with what I tell you in this chapter, along with what you've already learned about witchcraft in India and Africa, you'll even better understand why God said to stay away from anything to do with the occult and its witchcraft. Again, I have to mention this every time we deal with more aspects of the occult witchcraft problem. I am not okay with rounding up those involved to kill them. I am not for that and not advocating it, even though I understand that occultists murder men, women, and children every day. I still believe we need to put them through a court of law like any suspected murderer. I know I am repetitive with that, but it's because, unfortunately, people can take my words out of context and twist them. That said, When we add these grotesque historical accounts of witchcraft in Latin America, with the heinous practices we saw in India and Africa, you will see why God says he has zero tolerance for witchcraft and other occult behavior. He tells us not to let it spread in our minds, homes, or nations, and certainly not in the church. The Bible is clear about how we are not to let this stuff in at all because, if we do, eventually it is going to get bloody, horrible, rotten, and gruesome, and even beyond those consequences. When we look for Mayans, Aztecs, and Incas today, where are they? Well, there actually are some Mayans now, which I will get to in a minute, but mostly all of those cultures went out of existence. And when you see what they were doing, you too will probably think that was a good thing. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's take a quick look at where these past civilizations were located. The Mayans were on the Yucatan Peninsula, which is a part of modern-day Mexico, the Aztecs were a bit north of the Mayans, and the Incas had a huge kingdom spreading most of the way down the western coast of South America. Those three people groups were similar in many ways, including the fact that each practiced polytheistic worship, which is multiple gods and goddesses, demons. And that is why each of them also practiced human sacrifice. They believed that the gods and goddesses required blood in order for life to continue. So, that is the main reason for their horrific bloody cultures. Eventually, all three civilizations declined, and to this day the Mayans don't officially know what caused their ancestors' seemingly sudden demise, but there are about 2 million descendants of the Mayan culture in existence today. So, did they really go away? Not really. But that old human sacrificing culture is gone. You may recall from your history classes that the Aztecs were defeated by Hernan Cortes and other Spanish conquistadors. The defeat of the Incas was at the hands of another conquistador named Francisco Pizarro. Then smallpox finished the Incas off. But again, I'm telling you, when you see what was going on with those civilizations, you'll wonder if their extinction was really a bad thing. And I will say it again, I'm not advocating murder, genocide, or anything else outside of a courtroom. But when you take a look at what was going on, maybe God very well used the Spanish conquistadors as an act of judgment to put a stop to that horrible, murderous, and gruesome behavior. Speaking of the Mayans, Rebecca and I had our pictures taken in front of some Mayan ruins. It was a fun trip, but for some strange reason they don't tell you to come on down and check out the temple where hundreds of thousands of people were slaughtered. That might not be appealing for tourists. Instead, they typically have you check out the cool architecture and be sure to grub on some chocolate. They are all about their chocolate down there. But as you will find out in this chapter, when you understand what happened at those temples, it was weird to stand there in front of that repulsive structure, which is similar to so many others down there.
The Maya Empire reached the peak of its power and influence around the 6th century AD. The Maya excelled at agriculture, pottery, hieroglyph writing.
Hey, I wonder where they got Egyptian-style hieroglyph writings. And looking back at that picture of us in front of the pyramid-type structure, what specific shape is it? That's a ziggurat. I wonder where they got that knowledge. It was from the same place as their hieroglyphs. Again, all this history flowed out of occult practices in Babylon that spread across the world. That is another proof about how the different continents' traditions were interconnected, just like the Bible tells us. And a common thread from the Maya, Aztecs, and Incas was these ziggurat-style pyramids.
The Maya excelled at agriculture, pottery, hieroglyph writing, calendar making, and mathematics.
Guess what else they mastered? Unfortunately, it was witchcraft and other occult practices. Here is more on the Maya, and remember that this placating was the demented practice of human sacrifice on a massive scale. Communicating with dead people is necromancy, God forbids it, shamans are witch doctors performing witchcraft, and we know, hallucinogenic drugs are still used prominently in the occult today for connecting with demons.
Maya believed in a supernatural realm inhabited by an array of so-called powerful deities who needed to be placated with ceremonial offerings and ritual practices. At the core of Maya religious practice was the worship of deceased ancestors, who would intercede for their living descendants, in dealings with the supernatural realm. The earliest intermediaries between humans and the supernatural were shamans. Maya ritual included the use of hallucinogens for priests.
Again, all that is nothing new. It is the same old witchcraft and other occult practices. Drugs are one of the fastest ways to get people into an altered state of consciousness, for allowing demons to take over, possess, and speak through the drug user. Of course, those practicing witchcraft and the occult do not call them demons. Instead, they use spirit and other less evil-sounding names. But demons are what is going on there. For the drug effect, Mayans would mostly consume water lilies, which are hallucinogenic in high doses. American Indian shamans, witch doctors, did the same using peyote or mescaline as they chanted repetitively to get visions and connect with demons. Foolishly, that was the way they led their people. For supposed protection, the Maya actually buried their dead under the floors of their homes. They literally lived on the graves of grandma and grandpa. Many of us remember walking to school and avoiding the lines because we were told, if you step on a crack, you'll break your mama's back. Remember that? But what were these kids supposed to do in their own houses? They are stuck, don't go come home or you'll step on grandpa's head. Can you imagine burying your deceased relatives below your bed? As part of their ancestor worship, the Maya would put up home shrines like we saw way back in Roman times. Mayan shrines were for worship of a prominent male ancestor. Pretty much everyone in society had a shrine, including the royals, who used to keep home shrines before getting good for that. Royalty started having those ziggurats built as shrines to entomb their ancestors, while the average Joe Mayan, who helped build those structures, only got a little altar in his home. Now, besides Rome, who else before them also had those kinds of shrines? It was Egypt. So, the Maya appear to have gotten ziggurats, hieroglyphs, and shrines from the Egyptians. Are you starting to see how these methods all blend together because they came from the same initial source? Much like the Egyptians and Romans, the Mayans also worshipped multiple deities, including the creator god, sun god, and the storm god. The last one supposedly controlled lightning, thunder and the rains. They also had the underworld gods, moon goddess, and maize, corn god, as well as their worship of feathered serpent deities. So, there again is the serpent worship. I wonder who is feeding them all these similar lying and murderous practices? For those still wondering, it rhymes with Satan. And you will see that satanic aspect in all these early Latin American cultures. Now, in cutting to the chase for lack of room and also not even wanting to dwell too long on such evil, we are just going to hit the most gruesome parts of these Mayans' rotten occult practices. That will give us the best idea of how bad it got from their witchcraft. Human sacrifice is what they did all the time. And I'm not kidding, it was all the time. They did so because of their belief that blood was the nourishment needed by the deities. So, it was a regular practice and also done on special occasions like the dedication of a building project or a new ruler taking over. Those occasions required the sacrifice of human life as the ultimate offering they could give to the gods, demons, during their most important rituals. From that Mayan artwork, you can see some of what they would do to murder people. And that is one of the tamer depictions. Here is the disturbing process. While the individual is still alive, their heart is extracted by jamming a knife into the chest. After taking out the heart, the witch doctor then cuts the person's head off. Obviously, these people should not be doing any of that, but I wonder why they bother decapitating the poor guy or gal after they're already dead. Other rituals of human sacrifices involve shooting the victim or throwing them into a deep sinkhole. In fact, there is evidence of mass graves filled with the skeletons of people chucked in. Sometimes they would also tie people into a ball or disembowel them. Again, this was typically after their heart had been ripped out. These sorts of rituals usually took place in a courtyard, temple, or at the summit of their pyramids. Here is a gross explanation of what went on.
In one ritual, the corpse would be skinned by assistant priests, except for the hands and feet, and the officiating priest would then dress himself in the skin of the sacrificial victim and perform a ritual dance symbolizing the rebirth of life.
That is sick. You can see why God demanded that we not let this evil permeate our nations. Again, I'm not advocating the hunting down and killing of those involved with these sorts of occult practices, but I am telling you that we need to deal with witchcraft as a society because it still goes on all over the planet today, including here in the United States. Day by day, we are still allowing it to spread. Here is a bit about what went on with the Mayan people's human sacrifices.
Narrator. The discovery of the Bonampak murals, in 1949, shocked archaeologists and shattered this preconceived perception of the Maya's peaceful people. These colorful murals provided a rare view of the gruesome daily life of the Maya, revealing courtly life, war, and ceremonies. Archaeologists soon realized that, for all of their heavenly concerns, the Maya engaged in the earthly tradition of warfare, torture, human sacrifice, and bloodletting. Wearing a ceremonial headdress, a Mayan witch doctor is standing at the top of a pyramid and speaking loudly to his people gathered below. Witch doctor. Great people of the Banner of the Sun, these are the days of our great lament. They say this strife has made us weak, that we have become empty. They say that we rot. I say we are strong. We are a people of destiny, destined to be nearest to the gods. Mighty Kukulkan, one of their serpent deities, let us appease you with this human sacrifice to exalt you in your glory, to make our people prosper. Either an enemy warrior or Maya warrior is held down for the witch doctor, who holds a sharp knife high above the victim's chest. Witch doctor, here is a warrior unafraid and willing. The warrior does not at all look unafraid or willing. Witch doctor talking to his victim, with your blood you renew the world. From age to age, thanks be to you. The witch doctor plunges his knife into the warrior's chest, cuts out his heart, and displays it to the cheering crowd.
It is no wonder God cut them off as a nation. And folks, that example was completely tame compared to many others. Also, in that video, a man was shown running a knife across his own palm as an example of their bloodletting ritual. He was cutting himself, which is something we see in the occult today. But why would they do that? It is because they not only have a public offering of human sacrifice for blood to feed the gods, they can also do their part individually. So, the victims are murdered to get their blood, and the individual witches offer their own blood in their satanic worship. Here's a depiction of that bloodletting. You can see them cutting their tongue, ears, legs and arms. It's sick. This was just common practice to feed the demon gods. The blood was offered to their deities through what was called auto-sacrificial bloodletting, and they would use different types of weapons or tools like bone needles and awls, a pointed tool for piercing wood or leather, obsidian blades and thorns. As shown, they would do the bloodletting from places on the body like an arm or leg, ear, cheek, lip, nostril, genitalia, or the tongue. In fact, if you take a look at some of the Mayan murals, many depict a bloody mess. The whole thing is disgusting, but that is what they believed. They had to appease the gods, demons, who they thought fed on human blood. Of course, the demons demanded it from them. Once the person cutting themselves started to bleed, they would catch their blood on bark, paper, cotton, or animals' feathers, and then burn the whole thing as an offering to the gods. So, it was not just the practice of a high priest, and public displays, for events like a new king. Everybody got into it because that is what they thought they needed to do for good crops, success in war, or help with a building project. With the blood sacrifices, animals too were killed for their blood. For human sacrifice, it was often the sick practice of disemboweling people. Another terrible ritual was tightly binding the sacrificial victim into a ball and then simulating their ball games with him or her. It is so sick, and they did the same with animals. Speaking of ball games, I remember when we were visiting there, the idea of the creepy human sacrifice at those temples was bad, but they did not really talk about that. Again, it was chocolate, chocolate, and get your chocolate. Then I thought, well, at least the information about these people inventing soccer is going to be cool, what they call football. But it was not. Their so-called ball games were just as bloody because those two were all about human sacrifice and they certainly did not tell us that on our tour. Here is what one of their ball courts is reported to look like. You can see the Mayans put a lot of work into them and the facility pictured would be competitive with many of today's stadiums. They had some serious technology. So, you would think they at least got sports right. But they did not. Archaeologists found stadiums from as early as 1000 BC. These sports arenas are all over down there, and the one discussed here is the Great Ball Court of Chichen Itza, which is the largest they have found. It is 272 feet long, 98 feet wide, and has walls that are 27 feet high. Here is a video transcript talking about how they even used places like these for human sacrificing ball games meant to appease the gods.
For the Maya, the sky was not the only otherworldly domain, and the gods of the sky were not the only ones that had to be appeased. Beneath the earth, there lay another vast realm, a supernatural underworld, where the spirits of the dead roamed. The Maya believe this place of death exists side by side with the land of the living. The underworld could be reached in the most unlikely of places. This huge open court in Chichen Itza looks almost like a marketplace. But no buying or selling went on here. It was the setting for an ancient Mayan ball game, a game far deadlier than any modern sport. Measuring 550 by 230 feet, the court is over twice the size of a modern American football field. Here, two teams faced off with players aiming to hit the ball through hoops high on the walls. They played for the highest possible stakes because the losing team faces being sacrificed to the gods. The winners kill the losers and cut off their heads. Wall reliefs show the victors holding a loser's severed head.
So, they could not even get sports right. Their whole culture was permeated with murdering people by the scores. The bloody practice even made it into their way of entertainment. All the details of what these people did are absolutely disgusting, and it looks like those sorts of behaviors had something to do with why the Spanish came and took them out. Let's talk about some of the historical encounters between the two civilizations. The Spanish conquest of the area was from about 1511 to 1697 and shows what the Mayas were up to whenever the Spaniards encountered them. In 1511, the Spanish had a group of ships sailing along the Central American coast. One ship was wrecked upon a reef with 20 survivors that the Mayans seized. The captain and four of his companions were sacrificed, and the Mayas served their flesh at a feast. So, they were also cannibals. Welcome to Central America. Other surviving prisoners were fattened to be killed later, and only two men made it out. In 1529 and 1555, other Spaniards encountered the Mayans and were taken to be sacrificed. The men were sacrificed by cutting open the chests, extracting their hearts, and then decapitating them for trophy heads to carry around. The same sort of human sacrifice method happened to a Spanish party in the 1620s. Their hearts were cut out, bodies decapitated and dismembered, after which their heads were displayed on stakes around the city. Spanish groups in 1624 and 1684 were also slaughtered by Mayan heart extraction. In 1696, the Maya came for some Spanish people, bound them in the form of crosses, and then cut their hearts out. A month after that incident, a Spanish expedition had their hearts cut out. Now, again, I'm not for rounding up and eliminating occult people, but why is this history is not shared with us? Instead, we hear about them being victims of the Spaniards, who obviously reacted in such a way as most would when confronting this kind of evil. The Spanish may have tried working with the Mayans but often ended up murdered, in gruesome ways, as blood sacrifice to their gods, demons. I am sure the Spanish had enough of it at some point, and God very well could have used them as an act of judgment to put to an end to the Mayan human sacrifices. Of course, the Mayans' demons neglected to predict that on the Mayan supposedly futuristic sacrifice calendar. You probably remember how some people made a big deal about the Mayan calendar's 2012 prediction for the end of the world. I was blown away by the number of Christians who were also sucked up into that one, even though these Mayans were taking drugs and performing human sacrifices instead of listening to the word of God. Hello? Do your research. It blew me away. Since 2012 did not happen, some have been saying the Mayans were off a bit and it's actually 2020. Well, that window is also closing. They were much more than a bit off, and no one should be listening to anything they predicted. But many have been duped into thinking the Mayan calendar and that peaceful and incredible culture showed a real mathematical genius and an amazing grasp of astronomy. Not true at all. Excuse me. What you're going to see is that they did know some math and astronomy, but the most important factor about their calendar was not that it was necessarily as much for predicting the end of the world as it was a system for tracking the times they needed to murder people for human sacrifices. We hear all kinds of hype about the Mayan calendar supposedly predicting the end of the world, but it was really just an ordinary occult calendar for killing, just like the occult still uses today. Even here in the US, calendars are used for witches and other occult practitioners to do their dirty deeds. We will get into that soon. But the information about Mayan practices gets even more grim. Mayan art even depicts child sacrifice, with kids' hearts also being ripped out at various times, including at the beginning of the Mayan calendar. So, it was also a prescription for when to kill children in a bloody way. It is all just sick. A mass grave in the Mayan region was uncovered in 2005 that contained 1- and 2-year-old sacrificed children. Another excavation turned up the remains of infant sacrifices. And some sacrifices they found were not done on the temples or public squares. Instead, they were performed as small private ceremonies. Their society's demon-inspired practices were just sick. So, I guess we can understand some of the reason this culture was put out of existence by man and God. Now, I want to move on to the Aztecs, who have been depicted in movies as nature-loving people who got invaded by horrible Spanish folks that came to their land and took them out. Completely contrary to that false picture, we're going to see how the Aztecs brought the Mayans' bloody and gruesome practices to a whole new level. The Aztecs are known to the northwest of the Maya in Latin America. The Aztec zenith period was from about 1300 to 1521, and they too followed a calendar that told them when to do their dirty deeds, which involved human sacrifice on a massive scale. The Aztec calendar let them know when to offer their gods food, including animals and human victims. And just like the Mayans, the Aztecs were not just guilty of human sacrifice, but also cannibalism. Here is one of the tamer depictions from their culture.
To the Aztecs, death was instrumental in the perpetuation of creation, and gods and humans alike had the responsibility of sacrificing themselves in order to allow life to continue.
They also believed that spilling people's blood was needed for the sun to continue burning. As sick as it is, they felt like they needed to kill to keep the lights on. They did their murderous offerings to the gods in multitude ways and also practiced the bloodletting we've already seen. So, the Aztecs' methods were just more of the same bloody, gruesome, and horrible mess, including cannibalism, that we also saw with the Mayans. Now, listen to this quote that is absolutely unbelievable but well documented.
While human sacrifice was practiced throughout Mesoamerica, the Aztecs, according to their own accounts, brought this practice to an unprecedented level. For example, for the reconsecration of the Great Pyramid of Tenochtitlan in 1487, the Aztecs reported that they sacrificed 80,400 prisoners over the course of 4 days, reportedly by Ahuitzote, the great speaker himself.
When you do the math, that's 837.5 people per hour, about 14 per minute, and it was non-stop murder for 4 days. It is no wonder God saw fit to bring judgment and be done with their culture that is so disgusting to even read about. And if you think maybe those are just inflated numbers, listen to this: after the Aztecs killed people by the thousands, they would use the skulls to build the foundations for their structures. This stuff is nuts. Here's a video transcript describing just one of these areas.
Conquistadors once wrote of an enormous rack of skulls called Sumpantli in the 16th century Aztec city of Tenochtitlan, a row of vertical posts connected by crossbeams, threaded with human skulls, and flanked on each side by towers of skulls and mortar. The Mexica, the founders of Tenochtitlan, and one cultural group that comprised the Aztecs, thought human sacrifices would feed the gods and ensure the continued existence of the world. For the conquistadors, the skulls evinced the Mexica's barbarism and justified their conquest of the city in 1521. They tore down the Templo Mayor and the Tzumpantli in front of it, paving over the ruins and building what would become Mexico City. As the centuries passed, historians began to wonder if the Tzumpantli had ever existed at all. In 2015, researchers discovered a site that would remove any doubts about the Tzumpantli's existence when they excavated the remains of the rack and one of the towers underneath a colonial period house on the street just north of Mexico City's cathedral. The team dug about 20 test beds, unearthing modern debris, colonial porcelain, and finally, the basalt slabs of a Mexica period floor. As they dug, hundreds of skull fragments began to appear, but they weren't sure that was what they were seeing until they found the post holes. The size and spacing of the holes allowed them to estimate the Tzumpantli's size. It turned out to be an incredibly imposing rectangular structure, 35 meters long, about 14 meters wide, and an estimated 4 to 5 meters tall. They also discovered one of the towers made of skulls and mortar. Over 2 seasons of excavations, archaeologists carefully collected a sample of 180 skulls from the tower, as well as thousands of skull fragments, hoping to learn more about Mexica rituals and the post-mortem treatment of the bodies. Human sacrifice and even Tzumpantlis were relatively common in many Mesoamerican cultures. Cut marks on the skulls leave no doubt they were defleshed after death, and the decapitation technique seemed quite clean and uniform. In earlier studies, analysis of the teeth and bones of skulls unearthed in Templo Mayor suggested that most of the victims were born in various regions of Mesoamerica, but that many had spent significant time in Tenochtitlan before their deaths. Some historical accounts report cases of captive warriors living with the families of their captors for months or years before they were sacrificed. Studying these skulls in such intimate detail helps to tell not only the individual story of each victim offered up to the gods, but also that of the Aztec communities themselves.
And the Aztec story is one about a bloody and gruesome culture. Can you imagine these practices? They not only killed over 80,000 in 4 days, but then used their skulls as a building foundation. This stuff is disgusting and, again, explains why God saw fit to extinguish the Aztec culture. God sees everything going on with this planet, and he numbered the Aztecs' days. Now let's take a quick look at the Inca Empire's witchcraft practices. When we think of the Incas, often their citadel complex at Machu Picchu comes to mind. We are told that grand area at 8,000 feet in Peru is where mountain-dwelling and peaceful Inca builders lived in harmony with nature. But that is nothing like the reality of their lives. They had some messed up practices, just like the other cultures we have seen. And by the way, take a look at these architectural pictures of pre-Inca and Inca structures versus Egyptian building projects. It looks a lot like the Bible's account of how these people got their ideas from those traversing the oceans. Hey, do you think we have been lied to with the history taught in our schools? Yes, and it still goes on every day. Here is what the Inca Empire looked like. The Aztecs are there at the top, the Mayans are below them, and then the Incas covered much of the west coast of South America. So, much of Latin America was controlled by these three groups, and guess what the Incas had in common with the previous two that we have looked at in this chapter? It was human sacrifice on a massive scale. And it is interesting that the Inca Empire had an administrative, political, and military center of their empire, which was in the city of Cusco. Why might that sound familiar? Well, it is no shocker that Disney pops up again with that. If you have seen their movie, The Emperor's New Groove, you may remember that the main character is Cusco. And you'll also notice that one of the characters depicted is into Inca witchcraft, which was nothing like what Disney portrays. The real Inca witchcraft was despicable occult behavior that led to a culture of horrible, bloody human sacrifice. So, as we take note of what Disney has been doing, a strong pattern seems to emerge. I want to say, hey, can't you guys come up with a different storyline? It seems like they spend much of their time finding the witchcraft practices of cultures around the world and making movies with that as a common thread, including these Incas. Other popular characters in that movie are the Llama and Kronk. The latter is the main character, who went on to do a couple more movies, a television program, and video games. The religion of the Incas included reincarnation and a polytheistic worship, many gods. As we have seen with the Mayans and Aztecs, the Incas also attempted to appease their gods, demons, through human sacrifice, which they too carried out on a massive scale.
As many as 4,000 servants, court officials, favorites, and concubines were killed upon the death of the Inca Huayna Capac, one of their rulers, in 1527.
They murdered 4,000 people at just one event. That is a lot. So, for those who have been taught to think these were just peaceful mountain folks of South America, that description is not even close. And, unfortunately, just like so many previous witchcraft cultures we looked at so far, the Incas performed child sacrifices. They did so at the time of a ruler's death and because of famines. They figured they better go kill some kids to turn things around and get them back on the good side of their gods, demons. I'll say it again, why does God tell us never to let this stuff into our country, let alone permeate our society? I think we can see why. Is it starting to become a bit more clear about just how bad this witchcraft issue is? And some will say our Old Testament God was harsh. Again, I'm not saying we need to go round up occult people and witches to take vengeance without a trial, but I think this opens your eyes to why God has zero tolerance for this behavior. He tells us to keep out of it and don't let it spread. The Incas had all kinds of gods they worshipped for many different aspects of their society, including a goddess in the shape of a snake with two heads. The snake is again a main theme of so many witchcraft traditions. They also had a water god that was another snake figure, which again fingers the devil as their source of ideas and practices. Compared to the previous two civilizations, archaeologists have uncovered a relatively high amount of child sacrifices in the Inca culture, including a mass grave found with teenagers. In fact, the Inca practice of human sacrifice was mainly using children, and the reason for that was because they took it to the next level, thinking that the kids were the purest of beings. So that was the best blood they could offer to the gods. How sick is that? And even more despicable was the practice of fattening the children up months before the sacrifice. That is just hard to even read and mention. I'll ask it again, why does God say to stay away witchcraft and occult practices? We are seeing why. And I'm telling you, folks, if we're still alive long enough, here in our own country, where promotion of witchcraft goes on every day and in a big way, we headed down the same route. Actually, I still think we are already there with a lot of this horrible murderous behavior going on that the media refuses to ever talk about it. Here is something else I want to show you along those lines. One thing we hear about with Peru and the Incas is their mummies. The mummies they find are perfect. One picture looks like a drawing, but it's actually a real photo of a mummified young girl. Part of that perfect preservation is from the cold temperatures and dry air at their high elevations. These mummies are in such good shape, you'd think they had just laid down to die. For archaeological purposes, finding those bodies in such great shape has allowed scientists to study cultural aspects of clothing, hair, DNA, and even diet. But what they don't tell you is that these children were killed as human sacrifices to appease bloodthirsty gods, demons, or spirits. This one is a frozen 15-year-old Inca girl, who was found in 1995 on Mount Ampato. At the same time, two more ice-preserved mummies of a 6-year-old girl and 8-year-old boy were found. What the Ina would do is take children like that, up to the highest point on the mountain, and either strangle them to death, deal a death blow to the head, or just leave them in the extreme cold to die of exposure. Again, that was their way of sacrificing to the gods. So, when you see these mummies, you're seeing the product of the Incas' murders to offer human sacrifices. In fact, I don't have time to get into it much here, but after this study of witchcraft, we'll deal with Satanism, and then cover a hodgepodge of different related practices like voodoo, vampirism and shamanism. When we get to shamanism, we'll see that it wasn't just practiced in South and Central America. As you would imagine, shamanism made its way up to North America too. And that relates to how Disney and the rest of Hollywood normally portray the North American Indian cultures as peace-loving. You'll see that in movies like Disney's Pocahontas. Instead of letting us know the true story about how Pocahontas was a strong Christian in real life, they made her and her people into supposedly peace-loving forest dwellers. And they were living a beautiful life, being in tune with the helpful nature spirits, until those horrible Europeans came across the ocean to ruin it all. But that's more lies. They also murdered people for their human sacrifices. Throughout the United States there are a lot of mounds, many are called serpent mounds, and much of those cultures' practices involved human sacrifice. In fact, growing up in Nebraska, we studied the different Indian tribes, and one of those was the Pawnee. I don't think I was given this information as a child, but it's a good example of what I'm talking about here. The Pawnee had a ritual called the Morning Star Ceremony, which included the sacrifice of a young girl. So, yes, those despicable murderous practices also came up into North America. Again, I'm not for rounding up and killing people who ritually sacrifice others, or for any lawless retribution, but the historical question is this: when the colonists came to America, did they really discover only wonderful world citizens, who were in tune with nature? Or did they also encounter some of these brutal practices? That is another side of the story we are not being told. Getting back to witchcraft in Latin America, it still goes on today, but they call it brujería, brujería, and it is being popularized by the music industry all over the Americas. A male practitioner of Latin American witchcraft goes by brujería, Spanish for witchcraft, while the female version is a bruja. A brujería is a mixture of witchcraft, the occult, African witchcraft, and Catholicism. Just as we saw in the last chapter with African witchcraft, they didn't care if a Catholic went to the voodoo snake worship place next door, as long as he or she was sure to also attend Mass. That sort of practice goes on in Latin America, and here's more about that from a secular article.
The practice of brujería usually involves charms, spells, curses, hexes, and divination. Many practices are rooted in a syncretic blend of witchcraft, witch doctors, shamanism, traditional herbalism, and Catholicism.
You've probably seen people involved with witchcraft who wear a lot of Catholic paraphernalia, including crosses, which is just sick. We see the fruits of their brujería with that building's foundation of skulls in Mexico City. They built that city over a lot of those occult ruins and, unfortunately, that kind of horrible, rotten behavior is still going on today. Here's more about that in this video transcript.
Narrator: Mexico City, home to 20 million people, most of them Catholics. But for many Mexicans, the allure of magic is irresistible. Believers find the tools of witchcraft at the Sonora Witches Market. Two men stand at Mercado de Sonora, the Sonora Witch Market, while one points out Afro-Caribbean brujería figurines. Narrator: Anthropologist Anthony Sovaleta has studied the market for 25 years. In every cranny of this maze, brujas, or witch doctors peddle their cures. It's a market for even the most gruesome wares. Along with goods, the market provides services. In back rooms behind the stalls, nearly anything is possible. Spells can be cast or lifted, customers can have their spirits cleansed, or they can engage in satanic rites. It is all here. Curses fly powered by the wing of a bat and the tongue of a pig. Witches bind hexes in black ribbon, ready for burial in a human grave. Curses like these are all too familiar to Dr. Sovaleta. As part of his research, Sovaleta has been studying with Alberto Salinas, a healer who has come all the way from Texas. Alberto is here to restock his hex fighting kit. Dr. Sovaleta: What we found and what we saw that day was just unbelievable. In 30 years of field research into brujería, I had never encountered anything like it and probably never will again. Narrator: They came to a site where black magic was rumored to take place. The healers had come upon nearly 100 objects buried as part of a hexing ritual. Many jars containing different items are shown, along with some figurines that are wrapped in cloth. Excavator number 1. Look at that. That's unbelievable. Excavator number 2. Hold it up for me. Excavator number 1 holding up a sealed jar of something. This is casting a spell over someone.
This is the item they use to clean themselves, and in with it, they put a belonging of the person that they want to cast a spell over.
Most of this is black magic.
Dr. Sovaletta. Just the sense and the feeling that I had of the people, men, women, and children, who were captured, so to speak, in those objects, that are intended to break up marriages, break up relationships, bring people together, or more nefariously, to kill people and end people's lives, those were horrible things.
And it still goes on to this day, right above the bones of people who were sacrificed in mass. It's nuts. You know, I'm not going to say, thus saith the Lord, but if you know anything about Mexico and many of the countries south of there, year after year after year, they just don't seem to prosper. And they tend to have a lot of murder, crime, and corruption. They just cannot seem to thrive. I wonder why. Again, brujería as something being promoted through music and movies like Disney's more recent, Coco, which is about the Mexican holiday, Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. Disney dances around the globe to highlight occult practices of the different cultures. Can't they come up with anything else? How about something like, See Spot Run, the happy story about a dog and cat? Why can't they just get back to wholesome non-occult themes? Now, here is something I need to show you because it lays out the roots of feminism. Here in the United States today, this brujería, Spanish witchcraft, is not only being promoted by our music industry and media, but also through feminism. And why is that? It's because a lot of millennials with Latin American and African ancestry are going back to their occult brujería roots to gain a supposedly unique source of power for women living in a male-dominated society. And I'll say it again, much of the charismatic church promotes something similar, which promises power to women who come will come to them. It is all about miracles and spirit power. In fact, they also make women into pastors, which is not a biblical role they should fill. And women are also seduced by the idea that they can be apostles and prophets. Whatever happened to following Jesus Christ, submitting to his word, and being his disciple? Since when did it become about us attaining power? Well, it all makes sense when you understand the spiritual root is feminism's advocacy of female domination and power. Another related practice you may have heard of is Santeria, which is the occult's worship of saints. It's actually a blend of the occult and Catholicism. Now, in the next chapter, we're going to hop back over the pond to European witchcraft. And that will finally get us into the historical roots of Wicca, which again proves this is nothing new. It's just old-fashioned witchcraft that has been permeating the planet ever since the Tower of Babel.